I have huge ratings. Everybody's sitting and analyzing, gee, how far can you go? How can they? This is entertainment. People, there's a huge audience for what I do. We're not sitting there to debate whether or not my kind of radio is good. The reason I'm here is to say, hey, there's a lot of people who like what I do. I'm a damn good entertainer.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Now, I'm not saying that. I'm way too humble, as you know. Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Welcome to The Big Lead. It's been a good day on a lot of fronts. We got the breaking news right as we were going on the air that the CDC now says the coronavirus vaccine will be available for the most vulnerable people, which will mostly be people in nursing homes, and then they'll move on to the frontline providers, by December 10th. So we're talking about less than 3 weeks from now. Here's the head of the CDC, Robert Redfield.
That we have these vaccines, and it's very exciting. And again, it just reinforces why I want people to be vigilant, because we're turning the corner now. You don't want to be the last group to end up getting COVID, because the vaccine is going to begin to be rolled out probably by the end of the second week of December. Initially in a hierarchical way, nursing home residents, and then some combination of healthcare providers and individuals at high risk for a poor outcome. And those decisions are in the process of being finalized as we speak. I do think we'll have about 40 million doses of vaccine before the end of the first year of the year. That's enough to vaccinate 20 million people. But then it will continue through January and February. And hopefully by March, we'll start to see vaccine available for the general public.
So hopefully all of us by March, if you want it. I still know of a lot of people who don't want to get the vaccine. And I don't, I said a couple hours ago when this story was first breaking, I said, I don't blame people if they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s. They're healthy and they don't want to get the vaccine. And that made a lot of people angry. Dory, you shouldn't discourage people from getting the vaccine. Well, it is untested. It is a little risky. I get a flu shot every year, but we've got decades of examples for me that the flu shot is just fine. And I never get that low-level flu that some people get right after getting the shot. It's fine for me. And they never get the flu, which is nice. But I understand if people say, no, this is unproven. It's it's gotten to the marketplace quicker than any vaccine of its type in history. Thank you, Donald Trump. And I totally understand those who do not want to get the vaccine. But I'll get it. Frontline workers. I mean, I know one of my wife's best friends is a nurse. And she has been just absolute about, not seeing people. And, when they had a birthday party, we did it in our backyard and made sure that every chair was 8 feet apart. She works with oncology patients. And she can't transmit it to somebody who's one of her high-risk patients. So she has been just absolute. How wonderful if you can get the vaccine, if it's working. I saw Jack Nicklaus at his memorial tournament a couple of months ago. No mask, shaking hands with people because he got the COVID early on. His symptoms, even though he's well into his 80s, his symptoms were very mild, and he's been tested. He has the antibodies, which means he can't catch it and he can't transmit it. So he's been living a normal life. And I will wonder, are we going to, once the vaccine's out there, are people still going to wear masks to the grocery store? I will not. I will try to get back to normal as quickly as possible once the vaccine's out there. If I get the vaccine, the mask is coming off. You know why? Mainly because it's just wrong for me to hide this beautiful face from the world. Okay, with that as mere prelude, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
If you were listening to my show a couple of hours ago, I talked to an extraordinary kid, a high school senior at Shorewood, who told us the story of how her dad died at age 12 when she was 12, how her mom has been battling addiction problems, and this girl, Mia Battle, just determined to end the cycle of addiction, and the motivation for that has been sports. And she told me how hard it's been without sports her senior year. She has been a three-sport athlete. Mick Hoffman is the executive director of the WIAA and wrote an absolute wonderful piece a few days ago, headlined "School Sports and Activities Needed Now More Than Ever." Mick Hoffman joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Mick, good to talk with you again.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
One of the things you talked about is that in not just sports, but extracurriculars, band and drama and all of that, that schools in large part are in the memory-making business. And to lose that for these kids for a full year is a tragedy. Tell me just a little bit about your perspective on that.
Yeah, you know, high school, for a lot of kids as they're going through it, seems like an eternity or a lifetime, but as we get older, it's a short snapshot in time. But so much of our experience, life experiences, are based off of that starting point. And for students, you know, I don't know the exact statistic, but roughly 97-98% of our students who participate in activities, whether activities like you listed or sports, don't play after high school. So this is their one time to be in organized sports. There's adult leagues and things like that, but it's not quite the same as having your high school name on your uniform or competing in front of large crowds. It's incredibly sad not to be able to offer that. And we're hoping to be able to give a portion of that back this spring.
Yeah, and I certainly hope for that as well as they ratchet things up again with the shutdown of the state. I'm becoming more and more doubtful whether we're going to get the high school sports back. What do you think about that?
You know, I'm actually hopeful, and again, I'm trying to stay positive, but this spike we're seeing right now is not unexpected based on earlier predictions. And again, you know, this thing is so, you know, the word fluid keeps getting used, but it wasn't that long ago we had the Surgeon General telling us masks didn't help. Now we know masks are the most important thing. So over the last 8 months, you know, our scientists, medical professionals, and individuals, we've gotten a lot more information. And this spike was predicted, and hopefully the reason our board moved the start date to February 1st for season two is that we're anticipating, you know, through the holidays, people wanting to get together, human nature, that will continue to ride this thing out for a while. But that gives us 4 weeks essentially in January to bend that curve and to then allow our experience of what we found from other states around the country that have played successfully. So I'm hopeful that in February, if nothing else, we can begin some of these low risk sports. And ideally, if in the next 2 months, if we can get permission to play with masks that also limit that, we can play all our sports starting this spring.
Well, and here's the thing. We have to start considering with equal weight the human toll of not having this in kids' lives. And I know you know this, Mick. You know that I know it because you and I have both coached. But I've had four listeners in a four-day period between last Wednesday and Saturday who contacted me about local kids who had taken their own life. Depression is rampant. You have a stat in the piece you wrote, a University of Wisconsin study. 68% of high school kids are battling a depression that ordinarily would need medical intervention. We are wrecking the emotions and the psyche of our kids. And if we're doing this to protect them from COVID, then the cure is far worse than the disease.
Well, and that's, and I appreciate that. And again, not being a scientist or a medical professional, what I do know is what I hear from students and then what I'm reading in, you know, some of these initial studies. And if we wait until everything's peer reviewed and like we normally do, no different than what they're doing with the vaccine, pushing the process, it's going to be too late. And we have to factor in the social emotional. We hear on a regular basis of incredibly sad stories of what students have gone through, choices they've made. And we also have been, had some coaches submit some videos of students, you know, just being so thankful for the opportunity, even though they're not playing games, they're just in the gym shooting together. They're out on the field running sprints. Now think back to when you coached, Dory. How many kids thanked you for the opportunity to run sprints? And they're actually embracing and appreciating that. So that alone tells me how important it is just to be around each other and interacting in activities that give them some relief from all the doom and gloom we're typically hearing. So the vaccine's on its way. We're going to get there. We need to take care of our kids from now until that point. And when it's safe, right, or safer or safe enough, because, again, the other piece is parents will have the option and students have the option to opt out at any point, right? Well, nobody's going to make them do it. So where's that balance at? And so I know our state leadership's struggling with that. I'm glad I'm not in that position because there's no real science solid of years of study to make that decision. So I know the difficulty that – I understand the complexity. We're just saying, hey, please – utilize the social emotional aspect as part of the general health of our students.
That's well, there may not be years of scientific study, but at least you have for your football kids, NFL, college is playing, NBA, college basketball starts tomorrow. You have these other groups of athletes who are at higher risk than high school kids are of this thing. And they're able to manage it, and they have protocols that they have put in place that have been, for the most part, successful. There have been a few blow-ups at some schools, but, you know, no kids are getting sick enough to be hospitalized and all that. And as you said, if a parent, if a kid doesn't want to take the risk, they don't have to. But if we don't start considering the mental health of our kids, and you said something that's very important in all of this, that the administrators are afraid if we allow sports when the school buildings aren't open, it's the politics and the optics of it. And if we're sacrificing kids merely for the sake of politics and optics, then we truly are failing our kids.
Yeah, and I think that is becoming less and less of an obstacle. I get the opportunity to sit in on a lot of superintendent meetings. And I'll tell you, Dory, something that really jumped out to me in the early morning meeting I sat in today was a lot of them don't have the staffing to do in-person school because a lot of the folks who work in our schools are in that vulnerable age bracket or category for medical underlying. So they're opting out. So it's possible that you know, even if they want to do in-person school, there's huge challenges with having enough adults teaching and supporting in the schools where athletics doesn't require that. So that's the other piece that we want people in communities that maybe would challenge a superintendent or school board and say, well, you're putting sports ahead. No, we're not. Athletics and activities are part of that education-based system. And the other piece is I think people really need to understand is the students are stepping up. We're working with, there's 40 some other states around the country that played fall sports. And so we're stealing best practice from anywhere and everywhere we can. But last week, at the end of last week, the lead health officer for the state of Utah, she had a quote. It's great. It was something along the lines of, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but our communities need to follow the examples of our student athletes because they tested 16 high school football teams that were getting ready to go in their playoffs in large communities. They tested the cheerleaders, coaches, everybody connected to that team. And the student positive rates, again, they weren't zero, but they are 8 times less than in their communities. And what we're hearing and seeing from other states and from within our state where they're doing in-person learning in a few schools is that the students are holding themselves to such a high level of accountability because they want to play so bad. And so, you know, they're going to be part of the solution. And so, you know, that's another piece that factors in the decision-making at some point.
Yeah, and it's, you know, attacks the respiratory system, so we're telling everybody, don't get more fit. It doesn't make any sense. Well, I appreciate that you're out there fighting for this as hard as you are, Mick, and I hope that you are able to salvage something because our kids desperately need it right now.
Yes, they do, and they deserve it, and that's why we're here. So I appreciate the time. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much. Mick Hoffman, he's the executive director of the WIAA. And if you missed it, I had an incredible interview with a high school senior a couple of hours ago. I'll play you a couple of clips of that right after 2:30. Okay, next up in the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
With all of the crime in Seattle, and it is at record levels, we have fewer cops per capita than ever. Seattle City Council yesterday cut the police department budget by 18%. Dozens and dozens of cops have already left the force this year. So we have record violence. We have record crime, assaults, sexual assaults, and fewer cops than ever. They go together. Your politicians have created all of this. So what about the crime victims? You know, if they get hit, who should have to pay them back? You know, hopefully they have insurance. And then the criminal should pay them back, right? Pay restitution? No, King County's got another plan. How about you having to pay back crime victims? I know it sounds insane. But that's what Dan Satterberg, the King County prosecutor, is talking about. Como 4 had a package on this at comonews.com.
A program just approved by the King County Council that came from the prosecutor.
I don't have another jurisdiction to look to. We're going to be inventing this one as we go.
Victims of crime would be reimbursed by the taxpayer rather than the criminal, if ever, as it is now.
The reality of the situation right now is the victims are not being taken care of. This will help us take care of their immediate needs up to a cap of, say, $500.
The perfect candidate would be Mr. P, a bike delivery man.
Ran up to get a battery, came down, my bike was gone.
It was a $1,500 white rad electric bike.
And that was my livelihood, is doing bike deliveries.
Okay, wait. Time out. So in Seattle, a guy, and I'm sorry it's stolen, but if you leave a $1,500 electric bike on the sidewalk for more than 2 seconds, it's going to get stolen. So he says, well, I just ran up to get a battery. So apparently he didn't lock it up. Somebody steals his bike. And now you and I have to give this guy $500 for that? Question number two for Dan Satterberg and the King County Council. How many stolen bikes are we going to hear about that weren't stolen at all? Where they just, you know, can stash them someplace, call the cops. Yeah, my bike was stolen. And then the taxpayers give the victim $500. I have never seen anything. And I don't think anything exists in the history of mankind, like what is evolving here in the Puget Sound area, where we get to pay crime victims instead of their criminals. How about this? They say, well, sometimes the criminals, when they, you know, get out of jail, they don't have enough money. Put them on a chain gang and have them pick up litter by the side of the freeway until they've made $500. We'll pay them. Do we have to pay a minimum wage? But put them on a chain gang by the side of the freeway. Let them pick up garbage for 40 hours. And then maybe we, the taxpayers, can give their victim $500 because we got $500 worth of work out of the criminal. But no. It's just, let's just take money from people and redistribute it to others. It's insanity. And that is your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
I'm serious. There are so many families whose budget has been busted by this economic shutdown with the coronavirus. And now the King County Council is telling them, hey, a guy in Ballard had his bike stolen. you got to help pay for it. It's unbelievable. With record crime, you want to know how much that's going to end up costing us? I'm probably going to do more on this topic tomorrow. Okay, quick timeout, check the news, and then if you missed my interview with a high school senior on what the shutdown has meant to her, it's gotten one of the strongest responses of any interview I've done in years. And I'll play you some clips of that next here on the Dory Monson Show. And now I'm entering the danger zone. So, Sean, do you remember, Sean, back when I used to do the radio show at the radio station? Back in the olden days?
Yeah, it's a faint memory now, but...
Yeah. And I don't know, you're in the adjacent studio, so you probably didn't hear me complain as much, but the studio, the main broadcast studio, was always way too cold. I was always uncomfortably chilly in that studio.
Yeah, okay. It tends to get kind of chilly in some of these studios.
So I just got this little, tiny little space heater, and I don't have to heat my whole house, but my office is kind of small, and I thought, well, if I just heat the office, but I discovered that when I turn on the space heater, it makes me really sleepy.
Mm.
So I don't turn it on until 2:30, but the office is so small that it heats up quick. And I start to get sleepy really fast. So I have to make an extra effort to make the last half hour of the show energetic and entertaining so that I can overcome what is now a physical disposition to falling asleep on the air, which would not be good.
Right. So from noon to until about 2:30, you're just freezing in this,
I'm cold.
In this studio.
Yes, I'm chilly.
And so you give yourself a treat for the last 30 minutes to just sort of warm up and slow the show down, but you don't want that to happen. Yeah, okay. Wow.
But then, I mean, I figure I can stay up for a half hour, but I have a board meeting via Zoom starting at 3 o'clock today for this organization, and that's going to be where I'm really tested.
Well, do you have to be on camera for this Zoom meeting? Because you could just turn the heater on and fall asleep, put some headphones in your ears, sort of, you know, sort of like a white noise situation?
No, as a member of the board, I'm expected to contribute to the meetings.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I've never been on a board before, so I just assume you could do whatever you want, including falling asleep.
Yeah, for you, you think it's spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Oh.
I did fall asleep one time on the air. Have I ever told you that story?
No, but I'd love to hear it.
Okay, I'll tell you real quick here. So I used to do, you know, this is what I tell everybody who wants to get into the business. Don't ever say no to anything. Just get reps. Do any show. So I got a Saturday 6 to 8 o'clock sports show on King 1090. And then I talked to them. I said, give me a Sunday show as well, 6 to 8 o'clock. And then I went to them and I said, hey, how about if I do a news show from 4 to 6? And then management wanted to do a show called God Talk from 8 to 9. So I did a news show from 4 to 6 on Sunday nights, sports show from 6 to 8, and then a religious show from 8 to 9. That morning, I had been in Atlantic City covering a fight for King 5, Holyfield versus Foreman, and then we had a flight that left at about 2 a.m. Seattle time, 5 a.m. Philly. I came right from SeaTac to the radio station. I make it through the 4 to 6 o'clock show. I make it through the sports show. I'm doing God Talk. I take a call. We only had one call coming in, and the guy's just droning on. But I have nobody else on the line. I don't have any other guests. And while he's droning, I had my hand on my chin and I dozed off.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, in my headphones, I hear, hello? Dory, are you still there? Hello? I go, yeah, I'm still here. Are you kidding me? That was a great point.
And so you didn't have any producer at this point to sort of nudge you?
No producer.
Do you know how long you were asleep while on the air at that point?
Oh, 5 to 10 seconds.
Okay.
Probably. Yeah.
That's a horrible feeling. I've done that on the board op side many years ago. I used to work the overnight shift from 10 p.m. to 5 or 6 a.m. And back then I would show up sometimes I'd have a couple drinks earlier in the night, come to work, and then one time just sort of fell asleep, and Lan Archer, one of our lovely newsmen from back in the day, ran in the studio and woke me up, and I hit a button. Luckily, it was the right one, and got KTTH back on the air.
They're good. We're past that now. So I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to doze off because of my little space heater. In fact, I got some audio that I need to share with you right now. I talked a couple of hours ago with this remarkable high school senior at Shorewood named Mia Battle. And her story was just very inspiring to me. She lost her dad when she was 12 years old. He passed away. Her mom has battled addiction, and sports has been what's kept Maya on the straight and narrow. And she's one of the many who say, let us play. Let us play. And she talked about dealing with the disappointment of high school sports being shut down.
I'll tell you this right now. Sports that definitely shines a light at the end of the tunnel for me when I feel like I have nothing to work for anymore. Sports have became my safe place for when life gets really overwhelming. Ever since I was growing up as a young teenager, I didn't really realize how fast I had to grow up compared to everyone else. I thought living with an alcoholic and addictive mother and many addictive family members and dealing with the passing of my father was all just normal, and it happens to the best of us. But sports pulled me out of everything, the nasty thoughts I would tell myself when I was alone, while all I heard was fighting and screaming in the background. Sports reminded me of my purpose in life, honestly. The more and more I got involved, whether it was soccer, basketball, softball, you name it, the happier I became to be. Sports was my guide away from the path of addiction, if I really do say it. The safety of kids' mental health is honestly extremely important, especially during times like this. People like me who use sports as an outlet have gotten that stripped away from them. Suicide rates have increased drastically, which means there are a whole lot more kids who are depressed and need help finding a way out.
And that is true. Just got new numbers on the increase in suicides around here. And I just want to remind everybody that if the cure is worse than the disease, maybe we should rethink the cure.
Basically, who we choose to surround ourselves with can make or break life. Even when you feel like life can't get any better, there's always someone out there that cares. That's what I wish I knew when I was going through my depressive episodes. By being confronted with the worst scenarios, I saw them get better. Recovery is always there and is possible for anyone to accomplish. My mom was an alcoholic and narcotics user for over 5 years, and now she is 3 years sober from narcotics and making her way through alcoholism. And I'm finally able to see my mom again because that relationship, over the past 5 years, I felt like abandonment and that I just kind of lost both my parents and I just didn't know where to go. But luckily I had my grandma as a huge support system for me. And that's because a lot of kids, like how you were talking about, what you had to go through. A lot of kids go through the same scenarios as I do, and I don't want them to feel like they're alone, because it's really important to talk about. And a lot of kids just need to know just that they're cared for and loved.
I would really encourage you to go listen to the podcast of the Noon Hour and the entire interview with Mia. It got as tremendous a response as anything that I've done in a long, long time. So go check out the podcast. She's a great, great kid. And coming up next, our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio. It's the Dory Monson Show. Rolls on. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Good way to cruise through this holiday week. All right, it's time when we count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
The governor of Maryland is one of many who want to mandate mask wearing anytime you step outside of your house. Take your dog for a walk, go for a bike ride. He wants you to wear a mask, and his comparisons are simply ridiculous.
Well, it's sort of like saying, I have a constitutional right to drive drunk. I have a constitutional right to not wear a seatbelt or to yell fire in a crowded movie theater or to not follow the speed limit. It's, you know, we're talking about 250,000 people dying already. You know, more than, you know, the Korean War, the Gulf War, and the Vietnam War added together. Which part don't you understand? You wear the mask. There's no constitutional right to walk around without a mask. We did it in 1918. I don't know why we can't do it now.
I'll wear a mask indoors, Governor. I'll wear a mask in a grocery store, in somebody else's property that's mandating it. I will not wear a mask outdoors. There is zero evidence to suggest that that helps us at all. Then you have Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, who says some cops refuse to enforce the family shutdowns, the mask wearing, and listen to what he calls cops.
I believe that law enforcement officer violates his or her constitutional duty. I don't consider them a law enforcement officer because you don't have the right to pick laws that you think you will enforce and you don't enforce laws that you don't agree with, right? That's not a law enforcement officer. That's a dictator.
Oh, but New York, like Washington, is a sanctuary state. So you as governor pick laws that you will enforce and not enforce. Jay Inslee picks laws he will enforce and not enforce. I guess by your definition, that makes you guys dictators, right? Okay, and then finally, Donald Trump, it seems like he's finally resigned himself that he is not going to win this re-election. I have to say, at the annual White House turkey pardon, he actually kind of goofed on himself when he was doing it today.
The winner of this vote was decided by a fair and open election conducted on the White House website. This was a fair election. Unfortunately, Carrots refused to concede and demanded a recount, and we're still fighting with Carrots. And I will tell you, we've come to a conclusion. Carrots, I'm sorry to tell you, the result did not change.
The two turkeys up for the pardon were named Carrots and Peas. Okay, that's going to do it for us for today. Tom and Curly are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times, and I will see you back here tomorrow at high noon. Later.
We know that the world is going through a tough time right now economically. We see a lot of businesses scaling down, but not us. We're going to put on the biggest, most expensive, elaborate live show that's ever been done. We're going to make spending money metal.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.